Welcome, everyone, to the new 1001 Sherlock Holmes Stories podcast. Here you'll find a collection of Sherlock Holmes adventures, as well as the best of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's stories. Some from our archives at 1001 Classic Short Stories and 1001 Stories for the Road, and some newly produced, all here for your entertainment.
...still holds the attention of many superior minds, but it's the sport of athletics proper which holds the highest interest from April to September.
Well, there's nothing wrong in that, is there? I was a keen runner and long jumper in my youth, and not bad at throwing the hammer, either.
Oh, a sport for its own sake, of course, is very fine, but the pastime is now attracting the attention of the bookmakers. Bets on matches between Oxford and Cambridge on the most unlikely events. Before we know where we are, those American universities, which try so unsuccessfully to emulate ours, now be opening their doors to students, simply because they can play games like baseball better than others, really. It's hardly keeping up standards.
We present the stories of Sherlock Holmes. Tonight,
a problem at Oxford. It was but 2 days after Holmes had expressed his doubts about British sporting habits with reference to universities that I found Sherlock Holmes at the task of answering letters. It was an occupation that he thoroughly disliked. He rarely engaged in small talk and found casual correspondence a waste of time. If the matter required his attention, then it was usually answered by a short telegram. On this occasion, he looked up with a slight smile of welcome and said,
"This may interest you, Watson. I've had a letter from the Dean of St. Mark's College, Oxford. There's been some trouble about a cheque, which he's asked me to investigate privately. It appears that some person, posing as an undergraduate and wearing the St. Mark's colours, cashed a cheque at an Oxford bank. Later, Lord Farewell, from whose private account the cheque was drawn, denied all knowledge of the transaction and claims the signature is a forgery. Not unnaturally, the Dean would prefer to have the problem solved without publicity.
How much was the amount?
£100.
Ooh, quite a tidy sum, even for Lord Farewell. Actually, I know the young fellow slightly. His father is the Earl of Hartland, and we soldiered together out in India. I was able to treat his wounds after a skirmish near Rawalpindi.
Then you must be interested. I've wired the Dean saying that I'll accept his invitation to travel down to Oxford tomorrow morning. Are you able to accompany me?
I can manage a day off. Yes, I think I'd like that, Holmes. Thank you. We took the 10 o'clock train from Paddington and were at St. Mark's College in good time for lunch. The Dean entertained us with a most pleasant meal, refusing to discuss the reason for our visit until we had eaten and were comfortably seated in his study.
Now to business. I have here on my desk the returned cheque about which Farewell denies all knowledge. He states that he did not make it out and that the signature is a forgery.
May I see? Thank you. The amount and date are typewritten. Only the signatures in ink.
Quite. I understand that typewriters are as easily identified as handwriting, and this newfangled business of taking people's fingerprints.
Oh, yes. To the observant, typewriter key impressions are very easily identified. There are typewriters available in the college, of course.
In the staff room, yes. The college business employs them. I can't say if there are private ones used by undergraduates. I imagine there must be. I read a number of typewritten manuscripts.
Ah, then we've got something to go on.
Yeah?
You sent for me, sir?
Ah, yes, yes. Farewell. Please come in. Meet Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Watson from London.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Holmes? Your name is, of course, well known to me. And, of course, Dr. Watson. How do you do, sir?
Hello there, Christopher. How do you do? Haven't seen you for about 3 years when you won the mile at Harrow. Your father was very proud of you.
I hope he will have reason to be more proud in the future. I suppose the Dean has told of my present trouble.
We have called to see if we can help.
The affair is quite trivial in a way. I mean, I've been tricked out of £100, but the pater will recompense me, but, well, that's not the point. The point is that someone in this house has stooped to this method of stealing. Naturally, I felt I had to report it.
Of course. I was just studying the check when you came in. Tell me, how could anyone have got hold of the phone?
I run several accounts. I admit I've never been too careful about locking up my checkbooks. I often find them in the inner pockets of my suit, or blazers, for instance. The whole form and the counterfoil were ripped out of a checkbook I found in the drawer of my desk.
I see. And you stay here in the college?
No. I'm at Falcon Lodge, across the playing fields. It's private. I have the first floor. I don't think there was any form of burglary or anything like that. I mean, anyone could have got at my checkbook, taken for my coat or briefcase, when I was at lecture out on the sports fields.
I see. So any of your colleagues could have seized the opportunity to tear out a check form and counterfoil from the book you were carrying. You would naturally continue to write checks without being aware that one was missing. When did you become fully aware of the fraud, Lord Fairwell?
When I saw my bank statement. I studied the returns check. I knew it had been forged, and so I came straight to the dean.
Well, looking at the check, it's clear that it is a forgery. The person who did this is an old hand at the game.
How do you deduce that, Holmes?
The easiest way to copy is to perfect the handwriting upside down first. I think this was so in this case. I imagine that your signature is readily available, Lord Fairwell. I mean, there are specimens to be seen in public.
Oh, yes, of course. I sign all the sports items on the notice board. The teams that are selected, for instance. Everyone knows my signature.
So to obtain a copy and imitate it would be easy. I think that the typewriter that was used was also readily available, is that not so?
There is one in the common room attached to the library. Everyone uses it.
Well, then it should be easy to compare the type. Good. Well, it's still early afternoon. I think a walk after that excellent luncheon would be a splendid idea. I'll be able to find the bank in question, all right. Perhaps we can meet later, Dean.
I shall be here at your service, Holmes, and thank you for going to all this trouble.
Perhaps you'd care to take tea with me at Falcon Lodge when you return. Shall we say 4 o'clock?
Now, that seems a very sound idea. Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Lord Fairwell. We shall see you around about 4 o'clock. Come, Watson.
It was about a 15-minute walk to the main road and the bank where Lord Christopher Fairwell had his accounts. The bank manager seemed to be expecting us. He listened intently to what Holmes had to say, and then called in a young man who was on duty at the banking counter when the fraudulent check was cashed. Together, they listened to Holmes.
I'm undertaking a private investigation into the cashing of this forged check. So far, we've only established that it was typed on a communal typewriter at St. Mark's College. It could have been signed by anyone. Now, you were on duty when the undergraduate presented the check.
You can speak quite freely in front of Mr. Holmes, Hughes. This is all in confidence.
Oh, yes, I was. I must tell you that I've not been working here for very long, and the Oxford undergraduates who use this bank are not known to me.
Perhaps you would be able to give a description of this one.
Oh, yes.
You remember him?
Oh, yes. It was a very rainy afternoon, and we were near to closing hours, and he came in wearing a wet Macintosh and the St. Mark's College cap, and he had a scarf of the same colours wrapped around his neck.
In other words, quite muffled up. You could only see his hands and face.
That's right. All I can really remember is that, well, he wore spectacles, the thin steel-rimmed kind, and he peered a bit through them.
Did he speak to
you? Oh, just a few words. I can't recall exactly what they were. It was something like, a rough afternoon, please cash this for my friend.
Did he have any sort of accent?
No. He seemed to be choosing his words very carefully and speaking quite precisely in a rather affected English.
Quite common in undergraduates at Oxford. Anxious to be correct in every way.
Anything else you observed?
Only that when I gave him the £100 in notes, he placed them in an envelope that he had with him, and he wrote the amount on the outside.
He did? It's a very strange thing to do. I wonder why.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, and there is one more thing I noticed. He wrote with his left hand.
Ah, I see. Well, thank you very much, Hughes. Thank you, sir. You've been most kind in granting this interview.
I am sorry we could not have been of more help.
You have been exceedingly helpful. Come, Watson. We shall be late for tea at Falcon Lodge. Good afternoon to you, sir.
I do help yourself to more cucumber sandwiches, if you wish. Perhaps. I always take tea down here on the ground floor terrace.
Thank you. I rarely eat at this time of the afternoon.
Dare I inquire if you're any farther forward in your investigations?
I think a little, yes. Tell me, have you anyone in this college who is an American, short-sighted, and left-handed?
Goodness gracious me, what a question. It's a three-part one, too. Well, the answer is yes. There is a man here who is an American, Guy Lewis. He is left-handed, and he is rather short-sighted. He wears those American steel-rimmed spectacles. You know the kind.
Is he a friend of yours?
No, not really. I always feel so ill at ease with foreigners, but he is an extremely fine sportsman. Excellent oarsman, good runner. Could well get his blue this term. Why?
Because evidence is building up against him. Is he in need of money, do you know?
Dashed if I know. I shouldn't think so. His family hit it rich in the Yukon or some outlandish place. Are you suggesting that he is the man who forged my signature?
No, I'm simply trying to establish facts. And the facts are that he fits the description of the person who...
Gracious, what was that?
It sounds as though it came from the floor above.
But my study is directly above this... It's locked. I've taken the precaution of locking everything up since this business of the check. I wondered, do you think...
I think we should go up to your rooms immediately, Lord Farewell. Perhaps someone is still intent upon tricking you out of even more money. Shall we go?
The rooms occupied by Lord Farewell were small and self-contained. They consisted of bathroom and shower, a small bedroom, and a large sitting room, which was also used as a study. They were directly above the dining room, kitchen, and terrace room. It was a few moments before we could climb the stairs and unlock the main door. Then there was a small passage into the sitting room. That door was also locked. Christopher Farewell had his keys, and soon we were standing in the elegantly furnished apartment. It was immediately clear that there had been an intruder. A chair near the window had been overturned. The window itself was open, with lace curtains flapping in the breeze.
Great heavens, someone's just been in here. The drawer of my desk is open.
Yes, well, whoever it was got away through that window.
My bureau, the lock's been forced. Part of my stamp collection. It's missing. The latest stamps. I was about to paste them into the album. They're very valuable stamps. They've gone. You were right, Miss Holmes. Someone is intent on getting money from me. Now, what on earth are we to do?
Remain calm. Now, you locked up the whole of this self-contained apartment. Is there any other entrance?
Well, no, just the main door to the stairs and ground floor.
Well, it seems clear how the thief got away, but how did he get in here?
Blessed if I know. He couldn't have been in here before I'd locked up. I went into all my rooms, washed my hands, changed my blazer, collected my keys. It's impossible.
Well, then I think I'd better examine the window. Yes, I see that there's a flat roof right outside here, a stretch of about 7 feet before the drop into the grounds. One can actually get out onto the lead surface, yes.
Do be careful, Mr. Holmes.
Yes. Yes, that's it. Yes, this must be the roof over the terrace rooms. 2 bays. I suppose it is possible to jump down. It's quite a drop, all of 10 to 12 feet. Ah, what have we here? There are numerous indentations in the lead. But this looks recently made. It's here by the guttering. Most curious. It couldn't have been made by a ladder.
A rope, perhaps?
No, it's too broad for that. That's quite a mystery. Well, shall we go down and examine the earth beneath?
Yes, please.
Then you'd better make a thorough search of all your belongings and report the whole incident to the dean. Come, there's nothing more to be gained out here.
Holmes and I made our way down onto the grounds, while Christopher Farewell made a thorough check of all his possessions. We knew the alarm would soon be raised and the whole of the college agog with the news. It was one of those spectacular incidents that could not be hushed up. The burglary had actually happened above us while we were quietly drinking tea and eating cucumber sandwiches. I thought it all had an air of unreality about it. But Holmes was not at all put out. He went over the gardens under the window with his usual thoroughness.
Yes, here in the grass. This is freshly marked. See, Watson?
Yes, it's a sort of triangular indentation.
I think I can actually remove this section of turf. Yes, it could be valuable. I wonder if anyone here at the college comes from the Fen country.
Well, why do you ask that, Holmes?
That's just a thought, following the logical conclusions of the evidence so far.
Christopher, some of his friends.
Holmes, Mr. Holmes, I'd like you to meet a few of the men from my college. This is Jolliffe.
So how do you do? Stocking business.
My friend Eric Davidson.
How do you do? I can't believe all that Chris has been telling us.
And this is our American scholar, Guy Lewis.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Holmes. I guess this is something no one ever thought would happen. A thief at St. Mark's. I don't get it.
I'm pleased to meet you all. I know that this is likely to cause a lot of talk and a great deal of scandal should it become public knowledge. I think you should remember the college and try to hush it all up. The news may be given out by the dean as he thinks fit. But you know what will happen if the press gets hold of this.
Yes, indeed. Could go a long way to smear the reputation of Oxford. And with the big sports encounter with Cambridge coming up, well, it won't do us any good.
I agree. I am the one who's been chosen as a victim, but I must insist that we keep this within the house. I know you're all good friends and will support me in this request.
We will. But it can't be overlooked, Chris. The man who did this must be found. If it isn't stopped, who knows where it will all end.
Oh, I agree. I think there should be a general search made of everyone's rooms. It needn't be rowdy, just quietly and methodical. What do you say, Guy?
Sure. I go along with that, sure. Why not?
Right. Let's put it all to the Dean as quietly as we can. We must be guided by him and Mr. Holmes. Now, what do you say, Chester?
Holmes watched the retreating backs of the young men with a thin-lipped smile. I could tell he'd already formed a theory, but was not prepared to discuss it. It wasn't until over an hour later, when we were gathered in the Dean's study, that Christopher Farewell entered hurriedly.
I'm sorry, sir. I wondered if you were available, and Mr. Holmes. Good, you are still here, sir. My stamps have been found.
Well, they have. And may I ask where?
They were found at the back of a drawer in Guy Lewis's study, sir.
I see. This is a very serious matter, Farewell. What does the young man say?
He protests his innocence, says he knows nothing about the stamps. He maintains that he's not responsible either for the forged check or the theft of the stamps.
Mm-hmm. He must be given a fair hearing, of course, but it does seem that he has a great deal of explaining to do. Mr. Holmes, you are the expert on these matters. What do you recommend?
Well, with your permission, I should like a select group of your friends, including Mr. Guy Lewis, to gather here in the Dean's study as soon as possible. Yes, I think I can rely upon you, Lord Farewell, to choose the right men. Those I've just met, for instance, Jolliphant, Eric Davidson. A few more for chosen athletes. They must all be sworn to secrecy for the sake of the college. Can you arrange that for me straight away?
Of course, it was arranged. And within 20 minutes, the half a dozen young men were seated quietly in front of the Dean. Holmes immediately took the floor.
This is the first time I've had the opportunity to address a group such as yourselves in a place of learning such as this. I'm very pleased to do so. I'm just disappointed that the circumstances are so unpleasant. As a private investigator, I've always maintained that crime is never what it appears on the surface. Not big crimes or international intrigues, or small crimes such as fraud and theft. I don't think the trouble here lies with the usual motives of love or money. As you all know, Lord Farewell has been cheated out of £100 and has had part of a stamp collection stolen. He's the first to admit that these are petty crimes, but they are not what they appear on the surface. Oh, no. If I can reveal the name of the person responsible for all this trouble, would you drop any charges against him, Lord Farewell?
If it were for the sake of the college, then yes, of course I would.
And what does the sake of the college mean? It means maintaining the good reputation that St. Mark's has when entering for the next games, is that not so? I'm afraid that is where the danger lies. Athletics is a branch of sport that has hitherto been almost entirely free from professionalism and the evils of betting. But now, competition has risen to such a state that it has become work and not play. Now, this is the basic reason for the petty crimes we are investigating.
A most interesting thesis, Holmes, but I'm blessed if I can see how.
Well, let me show you. But first, to get back to the crimes themselves.
Excuse me, sir. Wouldn't it be better if we just asked the man himself to admit his guilt?
Quite. Come on, Lewis. You know you've been called out.
I have not. And I don't admit anything. I'm not guilty.
Just one moment.
Now,
let me start with you, Mr. Lewis. When I carried out an investigation at the local bank regarding the cashing of the forged checks, the cashier described the man to whom he gave the money as muffled up in cap and mackintosh.
Then it could have been anyone.
At the time this took place, you were nowhere to be found.
I was out walking. It was a dreary day, but I wanted exercise. I was quite alone.
That is no alibi. The man was wearing spectacles and was left-handed. He spoke very precise English, which could be an effort to conceal an American accent.
Now look here, this just isn't fair.
The check, which was typed out, had the dates of the day and the month transposed. In England, we put the day first, then the month and the year.
Of course, correct.
In America, it's the month, the day and the year. All this adds up. As the stamps were found in your study, the case against you looks complete. But, as I have said, most crimes are not what they appear. Supposing there was someone in the college who wanted you to be disgraced, dismissed from the college and the sports, then wouldn't it be a simple matter to imitate you? A pair of steel-rimmed glasses, easily obtainable. The subtle typing of an American way of dating a check. The affected voice. Even the unnecessary writing of the amount taken on an envelope so that the cashier should note that the left hand was used.
Look here, Mr. Holmes.
Do you mean someone was trying to get Lewis wrongfully accused?
Yes, this is exactly what I do mean. It's all too obvious. It's all too pat. Guy Lewis is quite innocent.
You're right, Mr. Hopkins. Thank you.
Then who has committed this annoyance? Well, it would be someone who, in the first place, would like £100 in ready cash. A gambling debt, perhaps. Two, someone who wants very much to be included in the Oxford sports team, desperate for his blue. Three, someone who is jealous of you, Lord Farewell. Perhaps a lady friend.
That can only be... It can't be.
Four, someone who is a fine athlete and a very fine pole vaulter.
What? A pole vaulter? None of us is a pole vaulter. Except
Eric Davidson, Lord Farewell's best friend. A man whom I suspect is rather in debt. A man who is in love with your current lady friend, Lord Farewell. A man who is desperate to get into the Oxford team and has probably got a lot of money on certain events, particularly the pole vault. The distance from the ground to the lead roof outside your rooms is over 10 feet, Lord Farewell. Eric Davidson is the only one who can clear that distance, at least according to your sporting records, which I took care to examine.
This isn't true. You can't prove a thing against me.
No, I think we can. I took an impression from the turf outside Falcon Lodge. I'm willing to bet that your vaulting pole has a triangular base such as is used up in the Fen district. The spikes will fit the turf specimen exactly. You've been a little too clever all along, haven't you, Davidson? Well, gentlemen, I've concluded my investigation. If you examine all the facts I've placed before you, you'll find my conclusions are perfectly correct. What steps you take against this man who has so outmaneuvered you is not my business. I just regret that jealousy and deception can exist to this degree in an institution such as this. Well, that is all. Would you excuse us, Dean? I think there is a diner on the 9 o'clock train back to London, Watson. Shall we go?
It was some weeks after this that Holmes paused while refilling his pipe and turned the newspaper over to the back pages. There were the sports results in full.
I see that the results are here of the athletics meeting between Oxford and Cambridge. Most interesting.
What about young Christopher Farewell? Does it mention him?
Oh, yes, quite prominently. St. Mark's acquitted itself well. Good to see that the American Guy Lewis was very much to the fore. He won the sprint events quite easily.
And the pole vault?
Cambridge won. No mention of Eric Davidson. I imagine he's no longer at St. Mark's. Now let's hope we never hear about that young man again. He's far too ingenious a mind. The sort of mind that makes a good criminal.
Or perhaps a good private investigator.
Well, one can only hope, Watson. One can only hope.
Listen again next Sunday to The Stories of Sherlock Holmes with Graham Armitage as Holmes and Kerry Jordan as Dr. Watson.
I don't know what the world's coming to. I don't, Holmes, and that's a fact. Hang it all. Here we are in 1903, now in the 20th century, and look at the headlines. Assassination of Royal Family of Serbia.
The turning of the years is no guarantee of human nature improving, Watson. I fear this sort of outrage may increase as communication between nations makes the world grow smaller.
Well, thank heavens I'm living in England. That's all I can say.
You think such a thing cannot happen here? I wish I were as certain as you are, Watson. Ah, an early morning visitor. Well, if it's the man I'm expecting, he may be the very man to throw fresh light upon this rather ugly incident.
We present The Stories of Sherlock Holmes.
The Counter-Assassin. In the middle of July, 1903, my wife's brother, the Reverend Percy Phelps of Great Paddock Parish, Nettlebed, was taken ill. After a short time in hospital, he returned to his vicarage, but Mary was concerned about his health and persuaded me she should go down and nurse him during a convalescence period. Of course, I agreed, and, as usual, when I was left alone, I returned to my old rooms at 221B Baker Street, where I knew Sherlock Holmes would be grateful for my company. Holmes had not changed in his habits and was still prepared to accept visitors from all ranks of life. The gentleman Mrs. Hudson showed in that sunny morning was a mid-European of striking appearance. Tall and thin, with white flowing hair, his black bushy eyebrows and waxed moustache contrasted with deep-set blue eyes. He was as near Mephistopheles as I've ever seen off stage. Holmes appeared unimpressed, but then he knew the gentleman and greeted him most cordially.
You are most welcome, Monsieur Grodowski. Meet my friend and colleague, Dr. John Watson. Watson, Jules Grodowski.
I am most pleased to make your acquaintance, Doctor.
How do you do, Monsieur?
Watson is a very old friend and confidant, Grodowski. Please feel free to talk quite openly in front of him. We share no professional secrets, but please, do be seated. You have time for coffee, surely?
Thank you, yes.
Good. This must be a very fleeting visit, for I observe that you're in something of a hurry. And I've already been working hard since you woke this morning. Did you leave the remainder of your luggage at the railway station? Perhaps you plan to catch the northbound express to Liverpool. What is it this time, Grodowski? America?
Oh, I see you have lost none of your powers, Holmes. Or are you now a mind reader?
Not at all. You've been here but a few minutes, and you have already looked at the mantelpiece clock several times. Your fingers have an ink stain upon them which indicates you have been writing at some length. You carry an attaché case and a raincoat. Yet it is a fine, warm day, so you are travelling. The Northern Line's timetable shows from the right-hand coat pocket. Now, why should a man like yourself travel north unless to board a ship heading west? It's really quite elementary.
Now that you have explained your reasoning, I do understand. I do not think it is as easy as that to other people, but, of course, you are quite correct. I have been working. I'm leaving the country as soon as I can board the ship, and I cannot stay with you very long.
Here's your coffee, monsieur. And now, if you'd prefer to speak with Holmes alone,
I... No. If he wishes you to hear what I have to say, then I have no objection. But you must be prepared to believe every word I shall tell you. It will sound unbelievable, but I assure you it is all true and of very great importance.
Then as swiftly as you can, tell us what it is.
There is a plot afoot to assassinate your monarch.
What? You can't mean this. This is impossible.
It is true. I beg you, Mr. Holmes, to take this seriously.
Unlike Watson, I do. I know your background, Grodowski. I know how your loyalties in Serbia will have placed you in very great peril with the revolutionary units in that part of Europe. You have always been a brave man. If you chose to leave and seek comfort in America, then it must be because you have reached a point of desperation. But tell me more. What do you know of this plan?
Alas, very little. There is an organization known as La Pochetta. It has sent a man to this country to recruit insurgents for the purpose of assassinating royalty and all those who actively protect them. I cannot tell you more than the name of the man in charge. He is known as Lapert, but he has several aliases. I am told his English name at the moment is Ronald Morgenster, and that he has acquired the most advanced weapon for killing, a unique rifle with special sighting equipment that can assure an accurate shot from twice the distance previously achieved.
And the assassination will be by shooting?
So I believe. I wish I had more information to pass on to you, Holmes, but alas, I had to leave all my files and correspondence behind. The little I can recall, I have put to paper. Here, I have the envelope in my briefcase. I have none of the technical expertise to pass on, but in layman's language and in a crude fashion, I have put down on paper all that I can recall. Here, take it. Do as you think fit with it.
Thank you, Grodowski. You are a brave man. I realize you are taking an extreme risk in passing all this on to me.
I can hardly be in greater danger than I am at the moment, Holmes. And now, if you will excuse me, I have to leave. There is just time to reach the station and catch my train. Thank you for the coffee.
Goodbye, monsieur. May I wish you Godspeed.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. Goodbye. Goodbye, Holmes. I think it very unlikely that we shall ever meet again. Goodbye.
Yes! 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 Y
I didn't hear of the death of Jules Klodowski until noon next day, when I returned from my rounds to find Holmes in a very dark and pensive mood. On the table lay the papers. One glance was enough.
Yes, Watson. As I have always said, Klodowski was a brave man. It's a sobering thought to realize that had he not taken the trouble to call here with that envelope yesterday, he might have given his pursuers the slip and got away. As it was, they got rid of him by neatly pushing him under a train.
Holmes, this is dreadful. But could it not have been an accident?
Extremely unlikely, Watson. No, the La Pochetta got him. When they seek publicity, then they openly assassinate. When it's a private matter, they simply stage an accident.
Oh, you are both in. Good. This parcel arrived for you, Mr. Holmes. I've signed for it.
Oh, put it down, will you, Mrs. Hudson? Thank you.
Oh, I've got some cold roast beef and pickles if you want lunch, Dr. Watson.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson, but I really haven't got much time.
No, it won't take long. I'll bring some in on a tray.
Oh, just a pot of tea will do for me, thank you.
Look here, Holmes. If Klodowski really was murdered, then it means he must have been...
Just a moment, Watson, just a moment. The label on this parcel is typewritten. All quite correct. And the postmark is Paddington. Excuse me. Don't worry about the tea and luncheon, Mrs. Hudson. Just bring me a very large bowl of cold water immediately, will you?
No. Oh, very well, sir.
This really is only to be expected, isn't it?
Well, is it? To what are you referring?
To the parcel, Watson, the parcel. I'm always suspicious of parcels through the post, particularly of that handy square size. Yes, of course, it looks harmless enough.
But Holmes, what are you implying? That this is a...
Look, Paddington is just round the corner, isn't it? Why send something through the post when it would quite easily be delivered by hand?
Oh, here we are, sir. This drawer is the enameled bowl from the bathroom.
Yes, that's excellent, Mrs. Hudson. Now, Watson, come closer. Of course, there's no danger at all, as long as the string and seals are intact. But once they are broken... Well, let me demonstrate. I'll hold the parcel over the water. Can you please take those scissors on the desk and, when I tell you, cut the string and tear the brown paper. Now, are you ready?
Yes, ready.
Very well. Right. Now. Good. Now, listen. As I thought, into the water, Watson. Good. I shall undo the parcel under the water, and you will see that there is a clock-like mechanism attached to the spring fuse. Yes. That's rendered it harmless. Now, out of the water.
Goodness gracious me. What's going on?
I'm afraid, Mrs. Hudson, I'm going to make a bit of a mess in here. I'm going to cause a minor explosion. Oh, don't worry. I shall fill the room with a great deal of smoke, and there will be a very loud explosion, but it will not harm anyone. Now, wait a moment, Watson. I have the required materials handy in that cupboard. My gun.
Well, Holmes, what are you proposing to do?
I'm going to make a very big bang near the window. From below, it will seem that the bomb has gone off and wrecked the room. This should do the trick. It's all right, Mrs. Hudson. I know exactly what I'm doing and the effect I wish to cause. I must carry it over there and set it in place neatly so that the blast, such as it is, will be directed outwards. There, that should do the trick. Now, I must ask you both to stand well back. Are you ready?
Yes, as ready as possible.
Oh, don't talk. It's one little bit.
Now, with my revolver, I shall fire at the parcel, and with a little luck, we shall get just the effect necessary. Ready? Then, now.
The whole of the small window was shattered by the bomb. Holmes had planted it most carefully, for while the curtains billowed out in clouds of black smoke, there was little or no actual damage within the room. Mrs. Hudson was horrified until Holmes explained that it was all quite necessary and swore her to silence. I spread the news all over London that Sherlock Holmes was seriously injured by a mysterious bomb blast in his Baker Street home. An ambulance arrived, a great show was made with a covered stretcher being taken out of the building and driven away at top speed to St. Mary's Clinic. It was there that Holmes took the superintendent into his confidence.
You must give me complete cooperation, Superintendent. I know that my request is most unusual, but I must insist that you do exactly as I say. I will get Scotland Yard to confirm it all. If necessary, I will obtain an official government order signed by the Prime Minister himself. The fate of some of the most important people in this land is at stake, even the sovereign himself.
Well, this is quite amazing, Mr. Holmes. Naturally, I should, in normal circumstances, demand confirmation of all that you say, but since you stress the urgency of the matter, I will agree.
Splendid. I will arrange for Scotland Yard to call upon you and verify everything I say. Meanwhile, I wish it to be given out that I've been admitted to your care in a serious condition. No one is to be allowed into my private ward except a special nurse and yourself. You will have to take one of the matrons into your confidence, but she must be completely trustworthy and prepared to take the risks for her king and country.
I know just the person. Have no fear. You can rely on us.
Good. Now, Dr. Watson here will be my go-between. I shall not be able to communicate with you in person, but whatever Watson asks you to do, you must carry out without question. Do you understand?
Yes. Yes, I understand.
Good. Well, that's all for the moment. Make your first official bulletin about me very cautious. Then as the days go by, you can report steady progress. No publicity over and above the Daily Health Bulletin.
I understand. Well, very well, Mr. Holmes. It shall be carried out to the letter.
And so all England believed that Sherlock Holmes lay in hospital, seriously injured by an anarchist bomb. I put on as good a performance as I could as the heartbroken friend, only breaking faith with Holmes to reassure my wife that things were not as they seemed. She was aware of Holmes' methods and tactfully withdrew her inquiries. Meanwhile, I went about my duties, and as the days passed, I made arrangements to have the window at Baker Street repaired and try to resume a normal existence. There was no news from Holmes, but one morning, returning before lunch, I found some activity in our sitting room.
Oh, dear. Hasn't that been repaired yet? You know, it should have been finished hours ago.
Oh, sorry, Governor, we got started late. And my mate here and I just fixed it up. It should be all right. That's right, Harry.
Yeah, right you are.
Here's it. See, down she goes. That's it.
Oh, yes, that seems quite satisfactory.
Coat of paint, as good as new. Don't you agree, Watson?
What? I should have guessed. I've been waiting to hear from you, Holmes.
Yes, I'm sorry to have entered my own home disguised as a workman, but it seemed the safest way. Please do meet my assistant, Harry Boggs, in the trade, but Roger Brent, to New Scotland Yard.
How do you do, Dr. Watson? Nice to meet you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Well, Holmes, what's been happening? The superintendent and the clinic is becoming rather difficult to handle. He doesn't know what to do. He wants to know how long this pretense of yours is to be carried on.
Well, tell him it will not be long now. In fact, I have a specific instruction for him. Things are moving towards a climax, Watson.
Yes, well, thank goodness for that. Well, what's been happening, Holmes? Have you found out anything about the man known as Lepert and this organization, La Pochetta? Is there any truth in the warnings Krodowski gave us?
One question at a time, Watson. Briefly, the position is this. Yes, those warnings were well-founded. There is a royal assassination plot afoot, and it's our duty to thwart it.
Oh, but how?
Well, there's already been one attempt upon my life, and it will become necessary to draw their fire, as it were, yet again.
But you don't mean that you're deliberately going to place yourself in danger, Holmes?
My friend Brent here is the man who will risk most, I'm afraid. He's been brave enough to impersonate me on several occasions. The real risk will be taken this weekend. Now, Watson, time is short and I've got to work swiftly. This is what you must do. I want the superintendent of the clinic to give out that I'm making a surprisingly good recovery. I'm out of bed for a few hours each day, and by the weekend I should be able to be wheeled outside in a bath chair. A special male orderly, my friend Brent here, will be in charge of the proceedings. I shall rely upon him to arrange a convincing enough dummy in the chair. My hat and cape will be sacrificed for the occasion. Now, it's most important that the chair is positioned correctly. Next Sunday morning, between the hours of 10 and 11, when I shall be taking the sunshine, here. I have drawn out a plan of the clinic and the nearby buildings. You'll see that here is Brunswick Square and Kenton Street is here. Across the road from the hospital gardens is St. Mary's Church. Now, Brent will wheel the chair out and place it right here. Now, with the plans I have laid, I'm sure the opportunity will be so great that my enemies will not refuse the bait. They will think that they simply cannot miss.
I think we cannot miss, Lepert.
Are you sure of this information, Breswitch?
I am. An orderly from the hospital had a little too much to drink in the bar of the George and Dragon in Soho Square a few nights ago. It was easy to get detailed information from him. Sherlock Holmes will be convalescing at the weekend. He will be allowed the use of the small gardens at the end of the wards.
So, then we must act. This time we shall not fail. Holmes was very lucky not to have been blown to pieces last time. He will not be able to escape from the sniper's bullet. It also gives me an ideal chance to try out the new equipment. I have assembled the latest rifle. It is a superb weapon, which I'm most anxious to use. There must be a suitable vantage point from one of the roofs of surrounding buildings.
There is a church right opposite. It is isolated, but it might be hard to enter during daylight without being noticed.
What, on a Sunday? Not with everyone attending church service. It'll be simple. Come, we must work out a detailed plan. It will be necessary to visit that church, find out exactly the position to take up. And then, for once, we shall go to church on a Sunday, Prestwich.
This is the longest Sunday morning I can ever remember, Holmes.
I warned you that it would be extremely tiresome, Watson.
That's why I seem to have been crouched in the corner of this parapet for days.
Mere 2.5 hours. It was necessary that we took up our positions ahead of the men we're about to catch. It will hardly allow them to hear us climb up here. Look at the view. It will take your mind off your cramped limbs.
We're attempting to do so, but it doesn't help matters. No sign of any activity down there in the hospital garden.
It's a little early. The door of the wards are clearly visible. Like a bent, we wheel the bath chair out of those first doors. The perfect target.
Yeah. Or supposing the patch falls into the trap. Supposing it doesn't. How long are we to stay up here like this?
Until the service is over. Most of the congregation will arrive now. And then... Quiet. Listen. Things are about to happen, Watson. Stay back and don't move until I get the word.
Yeah, good. Now, this is the exit spot.
Perfect. From this church tower, we look straight out into the gardens. And no sign of anyone down there.
No. Well, then we must be content to wait. Yeah, meanwhile, from the case, I take the parts of the rifle and assemble them.
I think something is happening down there in the building. There are people appearing at the windows. I can see through these binoculars. I think that Mr. Sherlock Holmes is about to be taken into the garden.
Mr. Brent? Roger? Are you sure you can manage this?
Of course, nurse. Now, don't worry. I think that the dummy we have arranged in the chair is very lifelike. A deerstalker hat, the cape and rug over the knees. It's convincing enough from here. From outside the gardens, it must look totally real. Open the doors.
Very well.
Thank you. Don't worry. I shall not stay with him very long. Here we go.
There, you see. It is just as we were told. There is the orderly wheeling the chair with Holmes sitting in. Do you see them?
Yeah, of course I see them. I can see them most clearly. The orderly standing in the way. I have the tray in the sights of the rifle.
The orderly moves back. It is clear.
Yes, open. Now to make quite sure. I've got him. He's fallen from the chair.
Stay where you are. Don't move, either of you. Take your hands from the parapet and drop that rifle. I'll shoot you on the spot unless you obey now.
Holmes, and how...
Oh, as you are told, Lepert, you also drop that rifle.
Yeah.
Sorry to disappoint you, Lepert, but I'm very much alive. Hands above your heads and move away from the parapet. Slowly now, and no tricks.
So, Sherlock Holmes, you have tricked us. Laid the trap. You surely do not think you will take us alive, you...
Watson is a good shot. He can just cripple you.
No. I would prefer death. And so would you, wouldn't you, Breswitch?
Well, what do you mean?
I mean we have failed, and because we have failed, we pay the extreme penalty together. So!
No!
You were right, Watson.
Yes. I'm sorry, Holmes. I just couldn't hold them. The shot was impossible.
Well, perhaps it's just as well. We'll pick up that rifle, Watson. That's the most important piece of evidence that's come our way in many a long day.
Of course, as always, Sherlock Holmes took no credit at all for uncovering the assassination group and thwarting their plans, which, had they been successful, would have caused total chaos throughout the British Empire. Of course, there was discreet recognition from the correct authorities, Scotland Yard, and an audience at Buckingham Palace was commanded. Holmes made light of all this. He'd had important assignments before and treated it as all in the day's work. The person who did come out of it rather well
was Roger Brent.
I must thank you so much, Mr. Holmes. I owe my promotion entirely to you.
Not at all. You deserved it. And didn't I hear something about more congratulations being in order? You are to be married.
Yes, that's right. Susan Bennett, the nurse who was supposed to look after you at the clinic, the one who helped me with the wheelchair. Will you come to our wedding? And will you, Dr. Watson?
Oh, but of course. And, of course, congratulations. There, Holmes, you see. Good can come out of all of this, after all.
Listen again next Sunday to The Stories of Sherlock Holmes, with Graham Armitage as Holmes and Kerry Jordan as Dr. Watson.